welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest joining us now is Weston Warren. Is it Warren Weston or Weston Warren, or what's going on here?
Vinnie, you got it right the first time. Weston's my first name. Warren is the last name.
That's interesting. You've got a last name for a first name and a first name for a last name.
You're right. That's exactly right.
Right. Or left. So please tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do, and plug your website, services, etc.
Oh, sure, Vinnie. I'm a research scientist. I have a multitude of degrees. The science, two science degrees that I have that relate to this technology is chemistry and environmental science. Went to a very well-known school here in the United States. And
what's the name of the school?
It's Westminster University in Fulton, Missouri. It's where Winston Churchill gave his speech, the Iron Curtain speech.
Mm.
If you recall, that was at this college. It's called the Harvard of the West, west of the Mississippi. It's a private, elite, Ivy League type school.
How'd you get in there? Scholarship, or did you have a well-connected family?
No, it was not a well-connected family. I grew up on the poor side, lower middle class, but got there because of my grades from the other degrees that I have and the project that I was working on that we're going to talk about this evening.
Hmm. Well, it seems like you're quite a learned individual, which means you've probably got wide areas of thought patterns and studies and whatnot, which, if I might say so, would probably result in some wide-rangingly effective technologies that actually change things on a fundamental basis.
Right. And a third degree that I didn't mention, but it is related, it might sound strange to you and the listeners, is a comprehensive degree, a doctorate degree in Hebrew and Greek studies, scriptural studies. So the reason why I bring that up is I have found through ancient writings and ancient civilizations and technology that a combination of that, what was already done in the past, and today's modern quantum mechanics or quantum physics, type of research and technology that is not taught in the universities around the world. It's a different, I hate using the expression thinking out of the box, but it's not taught. And there's a lot of technologies that are amiss because the typical PhD, the grad student PhD, their mindset is traditional university thinking, and they're missing so much.
Mm. Well, it just kind of occurs to me that PH makes the F sound, you know, like a phone. And yep. I don't know, they just seemed a bit effed in the head. That's a PhD to me. Sometimes.
Yeah, right. A lot of times because you're in the you're in that modeled system. So you're trained to think throughout the school system. You're spending 17, 18, 20 years in a school system. You get in a mindset, you know what they're looking for as far as your essays and your white papers and your research, and you're afraid to maybe step out of those bounds because you could lose scholarships or standing at a university. So you tend to be in lockstep in your research. So individuals like myself come along, and you have to be able to do this research and not be in fear of being booted, and also have your own financing. I funded my own financing.
Wow.
All of it was self-funded. I used to play professional sports as a living when I was younger and save that money in my businesses. Every penny was for me. So there you don't have the intimidation. It's your own money. They can't pull that rug from underneath you, threaten you with your research funding, your grant money. So that gives you some freedom. But it's tough to do. Not everyone can live off what they've accumulated over the years.
Mm. Well, I was just wondering, I mean, as you were saying it, how these kids go from high school to college, university, and then they'll do the post-grad studies and the PhD. And during the entire time, they've got an authority figure telling them what to do, what to study, how to think, and telling them what gets good grades and what doesn't. At what point do these people get a chance to learn how to think on their own independently?
I don't think they do, because you have to buck the system. As soon as you buck the system, it's say goodbye to your friends, careers that you thought if you're wanting to work for a Fortune 100, 200, 500 company. So I think very few people have the wherewithal to buck that whole system and be a true rogue researcher. Just like you're a rogue journalist, the real journalist. Look, you had to do it on your own.
Well, I'm not qualified at all. Although, interestingly enough, I saw a list of all these things that are supposed to be like the principles of journalism, and none of the mainstream media follow them. I wasn't even aware of them at all, but I was following every single one instinctively, because real journalism is simply about honesty, empathy, and wanting to see both sides of the story. And basically, that's about it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not freaking complicated. It's not rocket science. So if you're not getting the full story from a journalist, it's because they're not a journalist, even if they're qualified. Right.
That's correct.
And I presume in your kind of eclectic fields of research and technology that you might have had some negative media attention at some point, maybe?
Well, the research that I was involved in for many decades was below the radar. It's an expression my dad used to say. He was a pilot back in World War II. And doing this research below the radar meant we didn't use any federal grant money or university research money. Kept a low profile. Experiments were done quietly. No press releases. The white papers were peer-reviewed, but very close. So we didn't draw any attention to ourselves for a reason, because we were onto something big. And we didn't want industrial espionage.
Which is a real threat, by the way, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, it is. A lot of people don't realize it never hit the media here in the United States. But in March of this year, the patent laws changed for the first time in the history of the United States. The United States was one of the last few countries in the world that had the policy first to invent, retained all the IP, intellectual property rights of the invention. Well, they switched without any press releases and very quietly to first to file, which was what most of the world has right now. And people go, well, what's the big deal? What's the difference? The difference, I'll explain quickly, is when you're first to invent, and you can prove the date that you invent. Say you're a farmer, and you're well versed with tools. You have your own machine shop because you're forced to repair your equipment because you're in a rural setting. You don't have a hardware store nearby, and you invent something, and you log it, and you have a journal, and you continue to work on that item, and you scrape enough money. Maybe 15 years have gone by, and you go to file a patent. They recognize that date that you first worked on it with your original drawings, even if it were 15 years ago. And if a corporation or anyone around the world went to file for a patent, but they can't show their original drawings and intent, and you're 5, 6, 7 years ahead of them, the United States used to award that to that farmer because he was the first to invent. Well, now that it's first to file, you have an industrial espionage. A lot of your show's covered it, many others. You know, the NSA, the text messages and cell phones and Google searches all being recorded a live time. What that means is, subtly, say I was working on my next invention, and I've been involved in it for 3 or 4 years. If I'm being surveilled by the NSA, for example, and they're listening to my phone conversations, my text messaging, my email, my Google searches, and I'm in a database, they're not stupid. So they can tell in 3 or 4 years, I know what Weston's working on. Look what he's ordered on the internet. Look at the conversations he's had, the texts, the correspondence with his emails with other scientists. He's working on blank, whatever this So as a surveillance, what happens is when they know I'm close to perhaps contacting my patent attorney, the intellectual property attorney, they've already filed because I've been spied on this entire time. They file 90 days before I do, and I'm locked out. They're the first to file, if that's making any sense. It's very difficult now for the
industrial defiling.
Absolutely. That's exactly.
It's like defrauding and filing at the same time.
Right. So this might sound odd, but for any independent researcher now, because if you look throughout history, most of the earth-shaking inventions were literally the guy working out of his garage or in his basement. If anyone, all your audience listening around here, as you're researching and you have good ideas, think about it. You're going to have to do it without using your computer. No cell phone conversations, no texting. It's almost like using carrier pigeon and handwritten notes, because you're going to have to do your research subtle. If you order equipment, you're going to have friends or relatives order it, have it shipped to their house, then you collect it. Because even having stuff ordered and delivered, UPS, FedEx to your house, they understand.
Weston, everything has this turns inventors into drug dealers, more or less, in the way that you have to behave.
Yeah, that's where we are in this day and age. Your intellectual property, because of the surveillance, is wide open, and now you have to be stealth and behave this way to have any fighting chance to take a product to the point where you're ready to apply for a patent. You literally have to have this secrecy up into 24, 48 hours when you go to see your IP attorney, and he can electronically file and have that time stamp through the electronic file. And then you caught everyone off guard. Go, wait a minute. What is this? Some guy just filed something. Who is he? Where'd he come from? That's what you have to do nowadays as a scientist. It's insane.
So let me get this straight. It's actually made the scientists into basically saboteurs. Not saboteurs. Spies, more or less. You have to be half scientist, half spy.
That's right. You got it. Which is a shame, because my brain, I'm wired to be a scientist. Now all of a sudden I have to be like a CIA operative, some spy. That's not how my mind works. So it's taking time and energy away from my research, because now I have to think in a covert strategic manner. That drains me. That's time consuming.
I hate talking to people who are real cryptic in their conversations, because they can't say what's on their mind, because some freaking phone somewhere is recording them, and they might be sent back to a data center, and then they'll dispatch a hellfire missile that will hunt down that unlucky person who's halfway across the world and shove it right up his ass. You know, I hate those kind of conversations. They're really tense.
Yes.
Yeah. Sorry, maybe I'm going off on a tangent there. Anyway, speaking of technology, what have you actually got that's publicly available at the moment?
What do you have is a technology called PCO, photocatalytic oxidation. That's the technical name, PCO. And NASA, MIT, originally developed it for the space program, mid-90s, for the space station and space shuttle missions. And what PCO does is it uses a UVX wave. Well, that's what we use now. In the beginning, they used an ultraviolet light, a light bulb. You know, the blue kind of has a blue incandescent color to it, a UV bulb. And they had a doping or matrix material in close proximity to the bulb made out of titanium dioxide. So the concept was the photons or light packets of energy leaving that ultraviolet bulb would strike the screen that was dipped in titanium dioxide, and a chemical reaction, photochemical reaction, takes place, and hydrogen, positive hydrogen ions, and negative oxygen ions are formed. And any of the science people, your listeners, know that those are oxidizing agents. And what's good about oxidizing agents is if there's any kind of contaminant, microbe, pathogen, they're very effective in destroying or killing that pathogen or microbe. So that technology helped keep the space station and space shuttles kind of clean and sterile. There's two reasons. You have a zero gravity lab in the space station and space shuttles. A lot of times government agencies or corporations, there's a year's waiting list, and it's high dollar per hour. You don't want to have a 5-year wait and do an experiment in zero gravity and have it compromised because of contamination in the lab. So this would take care of that. And then they had hydroponic plants, growing plants in space, because if you have any kind of long-term space exploration, you need to be able to grow plants, grow your food. And this technology helps keep plants healthy and destroy plant pathogens, like your S. chartum, your Stachybotry molds, yellow, green, black molds that attack plants. So I was on a scientific team in 2004 where we took the original NASA design of the mid to late 90s. And after 8.5 years of self-funded research, quietly, below the radar, without any publicity, we took NASA's original design of this PCO technology and improved it by 1,000%. So, which they didn't think it was possible. But what this means is our technology now, which is very safe, just like NASA's was, we are able to produce these ion clusters, positive hydrogen, negative oxygen ion clusters, and generate them through this PCO technology. And any virus, pathogen, or microbe that's in the air or on a surface, our technology kills it in less than a tenth of a second. But it's not harmful. It breaks down into oxygen and water vapor. It'll disassociate naturally into oxygen and water vapor.
So it's kind of like, holy water or silver, you know. It doesn't affect us at all, but little vampire, little organisms and stuff.
Absolutely. Right. So how do you effectively kill a virus, pathogen, a microbe that's harmful to you and I, plants, animals? It destroys them on the spot, but yet doesn't harm us, isn't toxic, poisonous in any – that's exactly what this is.
Well, specifically, why is that? Why is it that those organisms can't survive in that kind of field while more complex organisms can? Does it affect any other things, like what about insects, et cetera?
No, doesn't harm them at all either.
So it won't keep slugs away from your plants or anything?
Correct. Actually, I can answer this that question, and that's a good question in a couple ways. People go, wow, you're smart or genius. Not exactly. No, nature already does this. When you have a thunderstorm, Vinny, for example, when you have lightning strikes, you have a major corona discharge. And when lightning strikes with your hydrogen and oxygen or water vapor that's in the atmosphere and oxygen during a thunderstorm, you have a creation of ozone, which is three molecules of oxygen, O3. Ozone is a very important oxidation agent. It's gotten a bum rap, and it shouldn't. Ozone's not harmful at all. I'll debate that all day long. And lightning storm also creates certain hydroxyls, oxygen-hydrogen molecules, and hydrogen peroxide, H2O2, which is what we create. We create a hydrogen peroxide plasma. And those are all natural scrubbers. That's why after a thunderstorm, you have that fresh smell, that clean, fresh air smell, because that's how nature, the way this...
Isn't it like an ozone effect? It's a triple bonded oxygen molecule, and it kind of... they do the same in ozone therapy as well, cleanses the blood of pathogens and organisms like that, what have you. Is that about right?
Yeah. So nature, if nature didn't create these this natural process, life would have ceased to exist a long time ago because the atmosphere would have been so contaminated. Well, when you have a thunderstorm and these natural molecules are created through the weather system, it doesn't kill you and I. It doesn't kill birds and earthworms and plants. We thrive on it. So we just found a way, Vinny, basically to mechanically create a thunderstorm without the rain.
Yeah. Well, you save it for a rainy day, don't you?
Yeah.
Although, you know, people are completely unaware of that fact right there. I'm completely unaware of that, you know? You know, you're saying, what, corona discharge does that? Most people think a corona discharge is an unintended consequence of entering a Mexican beer drinking competition.
Yeah, that's a good one. Right, so that's, you have natural oxidizing molecules that are created in nature to scrub the atmosphere and purify so that life can continue. We just are able to mechanically create that same molecular structure, but we're able to do it indoors. All the statistics show your indoor air quality is horrific. The EPA here in the United States, Environmental Protection Agency, spent millions of dollars in research and have shown that 70% of all illnesses is due to poor indoor air quality. And then there's a sick building syndrome where you have VOCs, volatile organic compounds, off gases of formaldehydes, acrylics, and glues from the building material, all carcinogen. The indoor air is horrific. Well, this technology cleans and scrubs the air instantly without any harmful side effects to the occupants. It's phenomenal.
Well, how exactly does it react to human beings? Can human beings even feel the effects, or is it some what?
Well, the hydrogen peroxide plasma, it's a high energy hydrogen peroxide plasma. It has a fresh air, slight fresh air smell to it. It's nothing pungent or overbearing. So naturally has a deodorizing effect. So it freshens, cleans the room. Ozone does this, that same thing too. If you have a flood or a fire, there's ozone machines to help get that smell out.
Apparently, but, you can chuck ozone tablets in your spa pools and stuff like that instead of chlorine and bromine and all of those other mean chemicals.
Yeah, that's your ozone treatment's a better way to treat your hot tub or your swimming pool. Water treatment plants have it as well. Yeah, it's much safer than chlorine and any other kind of a chemical treatment. And
I got a great way to clean the water that I swim in and dunk my head in. Something that makes my eyes burn with osmosis.
Yeah, and causes chloramines, cancerous byproducts. But you can breathe and inhale this. Doesn't affect you whatsoever. Just like hydrogen peroxide, when you buy it at a drugstore or a grocery store, you've got hydrogen peroxide. You can put it on a cut, you know, kind of bubbles and foams. Hydrogen peroxide's in toothpaste and mouthwash, so it's not harmful at all. But you definitely haven't – the ions help with your mood. That's why a lot of people live near oceans and waterways, because of the natural ions. It puts you in a better mood.
Hmm. And that's why a lot of people are starting to hate living in the city, because of the natural morons that occur there. All right. Well, unfortunately, Weston, we've come to the end of the segment here, and yes, we're going to have to go to break. Now, where can people get your product if they so desire?
Our website is bioshieldenvironmental.com. So BioShield is one word, BioShield. And you can do ENV, short for environmental.com.
Is that it? That's the only one? You're not on Facebook or Twitter or nothing?
No, I had a, I don't know, call me old school. I don't like the whole premise of Facebook, Twitter, and Zuckerberg, and you know, the surveillance. I didn't want to go to Facebook and Twitter. I didn't want to go that route.
Yeah, that just occurred to me as I was asking it. Okay, well, thank you very much for coming on the show, and thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. Remember that this is bulk supported by the listener subscription, so please go to the homepage, thevinnyeastwoodshow.com, and give us a subscription gift of like $5 a month or something around those ways. Just give something, you know. And if you can't give something, go do something for somebody else, you know. Don't give it to me to pay it forward. Just pay it forward yourself. It's the little acts of kindness and caring that keep the darkness at bay. Not always great power to oppose great evil. And also check out our wee sponsors there, the books, The Crowdfunding Revolution, How to Raise Venture Capital Using Social Media. That won't be of any use to Weston, because if he uses the social media, they'll get him. And The Range of Illusion by B. Holmes, a nice little novel there. Our sponsors are Volcania Coffee, that's going to be coming up soon. The High Tea Cafe, they're already up. And the Gourmet Soap Kitchen in Wagga Wagga. And also, if you want some lovely energy drinks that don't eat through the can itself, why don't you get Ditch the Can? There's a little banner down there on the homepage of the VinnyEastwoodShow.com, and it's energy drinks in a sachet with incredibly low sugar that are just as tasty and just as energy giving, but nowhere near as wasteful with all the canned products and whatnot, which I think is nice. We'll be right back.